Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour two of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Quentin Morris. With you till 9 o'clock tonight. Our number is 913-586-7965. We've got a few more messages coming in along the text line. We'll read those in just a few minutes. But I want to kick off hour two by absolutely flaming whoever this individual is on Twitter. I do not know who this individual is, right? It is TBB, Tamar Bates Burner, at Jimothy. Is that an S? Yeah, okay. I was wondering if that was an S or a dollar sign on Twitter, who took a screenshot, seemingly, of a conversation between him and his mother over text message. And his mom sends a text, or her mom, whoever, you know, this person is, says, mom says, I'm in a lottery to get Savannah Bananas tickets for their games in Kansas City, which are May 23rd and 24th of this year. Is that something that you would be interested in, And this Tamar Bates Burner takes this screenshot, puts it on social media with the caption, yeah, mom, I think I'm good. And this person is getting flamed on Twitter. I mean, absolutely bombarded with quote tweets. Give me the ticket, ungrateful. Keep in mind, your mother is the only one that would have your back, even if she found out that everyone is just. I mean, people are absolutely crushing this dude. And the one quote tweet I saw was from Randy Scott, who of course is a anchor on SportsCenter, who said some of us would walk to the game on broken glass if it meant we got to see our moms again. Go to the damn game, man. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. My mother's still alive, right? Obviously, I'm very blessed in that sense. So is my dad. I can't say that I approve of. I mean, just say no. Just say no, mom. I don't really feel like going to that. But to like take a screenshot of it and put it up on social media, like if your mom sees that on social media, she knows that's you, man. Like, yeah, I know you're using a burner, so nobody else really knows that it's you outside, you know, in your normal day-to-day life, but your mom's going to find out, which means your dad is going to find out, presumably. The rest of your family's going to find out. Pretty soon your friends will find out. Why put it on social media? Like, you're a total dirtbag for putting that on social media.
Yeah, just say, like, no, or, you know, if your mom's getting the tickets, you at least she knows that like you have some interest in baseball or some interest in going to it. I don't know why that like you felt the need to put it on social media. That's such a weird thing to stand on. Like, look, hey, my mom asked me to go to a baseball game and I said no. Got him.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm so cool. Dude, whatever, man. And the location services are turned on this burner account. This person's from Liberty. Right,
it's told you.
Tamar Bates Burner, so it's it's a Mizzou fan of some kind. Talking about they had a tweet earlier today saying that Todd McShay, Mel Kiper, and Daniel Jeremiah have Luther Burden falling out of round one in all of their mock drafts, and this person says Luther Burden's really going to be a Chief. Who has it better than me, man? Apparently, lots of people because you don't like your mother. Somebody just mentioned in the text line, he later disabled the comments. He disabled the comments on the post because he was getting burnt so bad on social media. Just say no. Don't go on social media and use your mom to, like, get clout. It's just, it's despicable behavior, bro. I mean, my mom earlier this week was asking me, she's in a lottery at her work to get tickets for the Big 12 women's basketball tournament in Kansas City. And she asked me if I would want to go. And I said, yeah, if I can, right? Like, if I don't have work or anything going on, then absolutely I'll go with you. I like women's basketball. I like basketball in general. Am I a fan of a single team in the Big 12? No, I'm an Iowa fan. But my mom wants me to go with her. I'm going to go with my mother, right? It just, you look foolish, bro. And like Randy Scott said, there's a lot of people on this planet who don't have that opportunity to go do something like that with their mother. So for you to say no is one thing, but for you to then screenshot that private conversation that you had with your mom and put it up on social media as this sort of like, ha ha, get flamed, mom. You're an absolute goober. I don't have a better phrase than that because
FCC rules.
Yeah, I have things that I could say, but I'll say that he's a clown. Absolute clown for this.
I'll pretty much go to any sporting event with anybody, right? Like if somebody was like, you know, like, hey, like a work acquaintance was like, hey, you want to go to this curling tournament? I'm like, sure, why not? You know, I've seen it on the Olympics. I'm sure it's fun in person. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Some people are just, why? Why did you feel the need to do that?
It's something, man. It's a different, I just can't understand why you would do something like that. Again, our number is 913-586-7965. Someone 918 mentioned that I think the Chiefs, this person put Royals, but I think they're referencing the Chiefs here. Well, the Chiefs will try to move up in the first round to get a left tackle, but I don't think that will happen because who will trade with them now that they've made the Bills look stupid twice now for trading with them? Yeah, I mean, they've made some serviceable moves. No questions asked. I mean, they've absolutely fleeced some teams. The Bills most markedly here in the last couple of years. I just, if they were to move up, right, I think a team would still be willing in a sense, but maybe the price tag would be a little bit higher, right? You might see like, okay, yeah, you want to move up to 23, you're offering us your first and a fourth, but this other team's offering us a first and a fourth. You need to offer us a first and a third, right? They need like a little bit of added insurance, to make sure that they're not going to get burnt like some of these other teams across the National Football League have been. A 660 says, any sense on if there's going to be any coaching changes for the Chiefs? I'd really love to see Nagy out the door and get our offense back to what it looked like, looking like it did, under EB, under Eric Bieniemy. No changes. Unless a coach leaves and goes somewhere else, there's not going to be any changes for this Chiefs team. I mean, they made a couple of moves yesterday. Matt House is coming back to Kansas City after he was a college defensive coordinator there for a while. He's a senior defensive assistant, and Chris Orr, who they announced his hiring a couple of weeks ago, but they didn't give us a job description. He's going to be a defensive quality control coach. But no, Eric Bieniemy, he's not going anywhere. I don't think EB's coming back. This coaching staff, they're going to hire some guys, you know, and fill some positions that have been vacated by coaches that are leaving and taking other jobs. Nobody's getting fired. Matt Nagy's going to be the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs next year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see if Doug Peterson came back, right? You know, the former Jaguars head coach. He was here for a while. I think the whole conversation about the Chiefs offense and who the offensive coordinator is, I don't think it's a valid conversation just because it's Andy Reid's offense, right? It's his scheme. It's his offense. So if you have a problem with the offense, you should have a problem with Andy Reid. The offensive coordinator under Andy Reid, sure, maybe they call some plays, but when they go to the sideline, it's always, you know, it's Andy Reid with the playbook and him covering his mouth. What does the offensive coordinator do in this offense? I'm sure there's a ton of weekly game planning they have to do. They work with Patrick Mahomes. So they are a vital part of the coaching staff. But if you have a problem with the offensive scheme, you don't have a problem with the offensive coordinator. You have a problem with Andy Reid.
Yeah, I don't want to go. There's such a thing as too much too fast, folks. You know, one of the references that I always make when you see a program, college or professional, get into this sort of territory, a dangerous mindset occurs where just winning is no longer good enough, right? There's such a difference as, you know, not accepting mediocrity, but when your team is not mediocre and you're still not satisfied, you're reaching a dangerous level of territory. I look back to, again, as somebody who follows the Big Ten very closely and is a massive, massive fan of hating Nebraska. You know, see how I put that? I've watched what Nebraska has become in the last 15 years, where when they came to the Big Ten, Bo Pelini was their head coach, and they were on average winning 9+ games a year. They won 9 or more games every single year. They had a couple of 10-win seasons, 11-win seasons, right? Like they were a top 15 team in America. They were on the verge of these big New Year's Six bowl games on a year-to-year basis, and they fired him. And what has happened since then? They can't get above 500. They haven't had a winning season, right? Like, they've been horrendous ever since they made that decision, because apparently winning a lot more than you were losing just wasn't good enough at Nebraska, which, again, some way, shape, or form is understandable, because that's a team that was winning national championships 25 years ago. College football as a landscape is much different than it was 25 years ago. And they got too big for their britches and thought that they as a program were so much better than they actually were, and things took a dive. Very, very quickly, things took a dive.
The grass is always greener on the other side until it's not.
Yeah. And so there's, you got to be wary of going too far too fast and assuming that, oh, well, you know, it's this person's fault or it's that person's fault. It's a machine, man. They're just a cog in a massive, massive machine. I mean, you look at the Steelers, fire their offensive. Oh, fire Matt Canada. Oh, we're going to, you know, this year is going to be so much better. You bring in Arthur Smith, which was a boneheaded decision in the first place, and they were still bad. It's not always just one thing that you can point to and say, oh, that's the problem. Let's take that out and replace it, and things will go back to the way they were again. It's just not that way. Someone said Reed hasn't been calling anything but like the first 15 in each half since the EB drama a few years ago. There's a reason the offense looks similar to his Bears system. I still believe that Andy Reed calls the plays. He is very much in charge of like the first 15 and the scripted plays and whatnot, but he still, I believe, is the primary play caller for this Chiefs team. I haven't heard anything to the contrary about him not being the play caller for the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know. It's a fascinating thing. Somebody was talking about that weirdo on Twitter, said, I bet his mom thinks twice before trying to invite him to a fun event again. That from Casey Kurt. Yeah, I would strongly dissuade myself. If I was a parent and that's the way that my child acted, ugh. Oh, somebody's a little fired up about the Savannah Bananas. Here we go. Anybody that goes to that banana bullcrap is an idiot. That mockery of baseball that they do makes me want to throw up. I have gone to 50 games a year, but this Royals promotion makes me sick. Who cares, man? If you don't like it, you don't like it. If somebody else likes it, they like it. I don't know if you know this or not, but baseball, in terms of its popularity, falling off a cliff, dying dramatically. Nobody's watching baseball anymore. Now, some of that is because of Rob Manfred and the morons in the MLB offices and the, you know, the blackout situations and all that stuff that they've got going on and how hard it can be to watch a Major League Baseball broadcast. But if that's the way that somebody wants to take in baseball, then so be it. Like, let somebody live their life, bro. Come on.
I have a couple of like bucket list things in terms of sports, and it's, you know, kind of like everybody else's normal bucket list sports, but there are two things that are on there. One, I'd love to go see the Savannah Bananas. Like, I just think that my friend has been, he told me how fun the atmosphere is. That just seems awesome, you know, to go watch some weird, like the guy hitting a ball on stilts. We know how hard it is to hit a baseball, much less make you like 13 feet tall and then also try and hit a baseball, right? Like, that just seems like a fun atmosphere to go to. My other thing is I want to go watch the Harlem Globetrotters against the Generals and cheer for the Generals. I think that just sounds like fun to just like mock the refs the entire night and be like, you know, yelling like, how was that not traveling, and cheer for the Generals. That just seems like a lot of fun to me. So yeah, I would love to go see the Bananas.
You could not have timed that up any better than you just did, because somebody in the text line literally just sent in a message that says that guy is probably mad the Washington Generals haven't beat the Harlem Globetrotters either.
Yeah.
It's not normal baseball. I understand that. If you're a baseball purist, that's fine if that's your opinion. Me personally, no, I'm not going to be chomping at the bit to go to a Savannah Bananas game. But if my mom or my dad gets tickets and says, hey, do you want to go? Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, if you know, just to go one time and see what it's like, sure. I'm not a massive baseball fan to begin with. I will admit that. I watch the Royals. I follow the Royals because they're my hometown team, and I followed them my entire life. But like when I was living down in Springfield, my wife and some of our friends wanted to go to a Springfield Cardinals game. That's the St. Louis Cardinals AA affiliates down there. And I was like, okay, like, do I have a great deal of interest in watching a minor league baseball game, especially a minor league baseball game of a team that I am not a fan of? No, but I'll go just because I want to see what it's like. I went to several events at Missouri State University. I went to basketball games. I went to football games. I went to baseball games. I went to softball games. I went to, watched, and covered soccer games. I'm not a soccer fan either, for the most part. But I went because it's an interesting thing to experience in your life. And if that's what somebody wants to go take in, then so be it. If it's not your preference, it's not your preference. And I don't fault you for having that opinion. I myself do not want to go watch a Savannah Banana game either. I wouldn't voluntarily spend money and go buy those tickets. But if somebody wants me to go with them, then I'll go. Just the nature of the beast. To each their own. It's everybody's preference. That guy can probably see John Cena too. I don't know. Can you see John Cena? I don't know. I thought it was weird. I watched that Ricky Stenicki movie a while back, and it was like half the movie there was just like they were just talking to a space. It was so bizarre. I can't believe that joke's been going for 15 years and yet it somehow doesn't seem played out. 913-586-7965 is our number. Continue to send us messages and questions that you want to have answered on the program here tonight. Coming up a little bit later on, I am going to replay an interview for you from Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. He was on with me last night talking a little bit of Royals. We'll replay that interview coming up a little bit later on this evening. You're listening to After Hours with Logan Weber and Quentin Morris on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan. Couple of legends announcing their retirement today, one in the NFL and one in the WNBA. The first out of the National Football League, Jason Peters, has finally decided to call it quits in his career. A guy who had no expectations, none, when he entered the NFL and built out an incredible career. He was an undrafted free agent in 2004, picked up by the Buffalo Bills, and wound up spending 5 years there. He then spent over a decade with the Philadelphia Eagles, where he had the best years of his career. He won a Super Bowl, spent some time with the Bears and the Cowboys, and most recently was with the Seahawks. So 20 years in the National Football League, more or less. He won a Super Bowl. He was a six-time All-Pro selection. Two first teams, four second teams. He went to 9 Pro Bowls. He was a member of the 2010s All-Decade team. Again, this is an undrafted free agent who went to nearly 10 Pro Bowls in his career, finally decided to hang it up. I think that that is most certainly a Hall of Fame resume. He was considered one of the best tackles in football for a huge chunk of his career, especially those years in Philadelphia. So a very, very impressive career in his right. So a big congratulations to Jason Peters on an outstanding career. And then another story, this one out of the WNBA. The all-time leading scorer in Women's National Basketball Association history, Diana Taurasi, has announced that she is retiring. She said, "Mentally and physically, I'm just full. That's probably the best way I can describe it. I'm full and I'm happy." She has long been considered one of the best to ever play in the history of women's college basketball. She, you know, basically just said that she didn't have anything left in the tank for her in her career. She was an outstanding player at UConn under Gino Auriemma and had an incredibly impressive career. She scored 10,646 points in her WNBA career. She's the only WNBA player as of now to surpass 10,000 career points. She had another 1,500 nearly in playoff games, played 20 years in the league, or 21, excuse me. She was drafted number one overall in 04 and won three WNBA championships. She was a five-time scoring champ, 14-time All-WNBA selection. She was the MVP in 09, finals MVP twice. And she also leaves the WNBA as the league's all-time leader in three-pointers made in both the regular season and the postseason. So a couple of future Hall of Famers in their respective sports hanging it up today.
It's also just nice to see people who get to go out on their own terms. You know, like how many times, especially like the super elite athletes who, you know, they leave because they were basically forced out. They couldn't find a job somewhere or whatever, injury. That they get to leave on their own terms. And then when you get like the, I don't want to say Disney-esque story, but that's kind of what it was, right? For Jason, just being undrafted free agent, you know, you had to grind for it. You know that you had to work for everything that you got. And that's just, it's kind of the beauty behind sports when you read a story or hear a story about that.
So those are a couple of big storylines coming out today. The San Francisco 49ers also announced an offensive coordinator change. On Tuesday, they revealed that, Clay Kubiak has been promoted to offensive coordinator and has been giving play calling reins with this team. He was the team's pass game specialist this past year. He was an assistant quarterback coach for a couple of years and got started in San Francisco as a defensive quality control coach. So that's an interesting one to go from the defensive quality control to the offensive coordinator of your organization within 4 years.
I think the last time that an organization did that, it did not turn out so well. I'm looking at you, New England.
Fair point. Robert Saleh has also been confirmed as the new defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, basically taking up the mantle of his old position that he was in before he took the New York Jets job. Brant Boyer is the special teams coordinator for the Niners this year. And they made a lot of changes, a lot of changes on this roster after a troublesome season. It was injury riddled, to say the least. But it's a fascinating dynamic there for the Niners in the National Football League. The Cincinnati Bengals have also said that they are planning on making wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase the NFL's highest paid non-quarterback. Duh. That's probably the decision you should make.
See, I know that's the report. I don't know if I truly believe it because I think that on paper it'll look like the highest paid, but I don't think any of the money is going to be real. I think that he'll get, you know, a lot of guaranteed money, but there's going to be so much funny money on the end of that contract that he gets offered because this is what happened last offseason. People forget that the Bengals did offer Ja'Marr Chase a contract. Just the contract was a ton of funny money and not a lot of it was guaranteed. So I'm imagining that the Bengals are going to do the same thing. And I think that this is going to be a conversation that's going to drag out all offseason and I can't wait for it.
That's an interesting one to watch. That entire Bengals offseason is going to be so fascinating. You know, if you make Ja'Marr Chase this incredibly high paid court wide receiver, okay, what do you got left for T. Higgins and Dre Hendrickson, right? Do you try to address the running back position unless you think that you've got the guy there at the running back spot, which there are some there that believe that they do. The Bengals have some questions they've got to get answered. And you know, you put all that money into those guys, you're not going to have a lot left over to try to affect how poor that defense was.
That's exactly the point I wanted to make, is that your offense was the best part of your team last year, and you're going to invest more into it in terms of your cap space. and you're not going to be able to invest anything significant inside that defense. And that defense was atrocious. Like, it was awful. And this is going to be a problem for years to come. I think that when we look back on this, we might be looking at the next Dan Marino playing quarterback in Cincinnati.
Very well could. I mean, he's already been to and lost a Super Bowl. That was about the extent of what Marino got to as in terms of team success throughout his career. So I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility to have something there happen. Last bit of NFL news I've got for you before we hit the break here. The Indianapolis Colts have said that they are planning on having an open competition at the quarterback spot between Anthony Richardson and a, as they described it, yet to be determined player that they intend to acquire this offseason, whether that is through the draft, presumably, or through free agency. I don't know how many starter level free agent quarterbacks are going to be at your disposal. Maybe they make a deal for somebody. I don't know. Right. The
who's the next Geno Smith?
I don't know. I mean, Geno Smith could be the next Geno Smith,
I guess.
Right? The Seattle Seahawks and Geno Smith, according to reports, are not incredibly close on terms of, you know, terms, so to speak, for what his asking price could be. I know that the Los Angeles Rams have given Matthew Stafford permission to kind of shop his wares around. Do the Colts try to go after another aging quarterback? You tried it with Carson Wentz. It didn't work. You tried it with Matt Ryan. It didn't work. You kind of tried it with Joe Flacco this year.
Don't forget Phillip Rivers.
Oh, God. Yeah, Phillip Rivers. My goodness. Sorry. I can barely picture Matt Ryan not in a Falcons uniform. I vaguely remember him in a Colts uniform because he was the starting quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts when they upset the Chiefs in like week six a couple seasons ago. I never, ever can picture Phillip Rivers in anything but Steelers blue, or excuse me, Chargers blue or white with that yellow bolt on the side of the helmet. I forgot he was a quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts.
It's going to be really interesting that when the Colts end up finding, if they find, their quarterback of the future, because let's be honest, there have been teams that have been trying to find their quarterback of the future for decades. We might be looking at the next team that has like post Andrew Luck era. They're wearing the Cleveland Brown style jersey where it's like the duct tape on top of the duct tape on top of the duct tape for the quarterback that they've been playing. Because for how few years it's been, that list is already pretty long.
Yeah, very. I mean, it's going to be fascinating because the Colts have the 14th pick. So that typically doesn't put you in the realm of an upper echelon quarterback. Do you want to, though? Like, that's the other question. Like, do you take... You're not going to take a quarterback at 14.
No.
I just don't see that as possible or responsible at that rate. So you wait until round two, round three to take a quarterback, like a Will Howard out of Ohio State or somebody of that magnitude, because you're not going to be getting a Cam Ward or a Shedeur Sanders or even close to with the 14th overall pick. So I don't know. I'm not sure. I think it's incredibly likely. I think it's more likely, I should say, that they would go after like a Geno Smith in free agency or make a trade for a Matthew Stafford or somebody like that rather than trying to draft a quarterback.
Yeah, or does Kirk Cousins get cut?
Well, it's funny that you asked that question. We got an update from the Atlanta Falcons on that exact situation, and I want to talk about that when we come back. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Our number, 913-586-7965. Back in a few right here on your home for Kansas City sports.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
We teased before the break, what will the Atlanta Falcons do with Kirk Cousins? It's a fascinating subject, right? Because the overall assumption is Michael Penix Jr. will be the starter for the Atlanta Falcons next year. He came in the back half of the season, or final third of the season more closely, and I think performed fairly well. I think that he kind of took it in stride and the Falcons liked what they saw. And so that leaves you with Kirk Cousins as a very, very, very highly paid backup quarterback. And with that in mind, the Falcons general manager, Terry Fontenot, said that they are completely comfortable keeping Kirk Cousins as the backup quarterback. This, according to some reports that I was reading earlier today, paying him $27.5 million next year, which will also trigger another $10 million of his contract for 2026 to become fully guaranteed on March 17th. What? You're going to pay a backup quarterback $27.5 million next year?
I think part of this is just like a negotiation thing. Like, you can't just openly say like, hey, you know, we aren't dealing with this anymore. You kind of have to save face just for the fact that you signed this guy to this huge, fully guaranteed deal in the offseason and then drafted a first-round quarterback and everybody laughed at you. And then the other part is I do think that there are some teams that if they don't think you're going to cut him, they might be interested in acquiring him, at least throwing something in your direction, because mediocre quarterbacks are still worth a lot. So I think that there's just a little bit of gamesmanship going on. But I think for the most part, if I had to take a guess, I bet Kirk Cousins is cut, because I think that he can raise a stink up and say, hey, you either have to pay me or I will just write. This is a guy who was in the top five of all time in quarterback career earnings. Like, he knows how, he's a businessman.
The amount of money that Kirk Cousins has made in his career is remarkable. I give the guy a lot of credit. I mean, I admittedly have made jokes at the expense of Chase Daniel.
I'm not even kidding you. I have a spot track up right now. I was going to make the joke that he's made $44 million in his career. I'm kidding you right now. On the computer, I have a spot track up right now.
It's pretty incredible, especially when you look at like the number of passes that he attempted.
Yes.
He made like $130,000 per pass attempt in his NFL career. That it's just a stunt. And for a guy like Kirk Cousins, who in his first 4 years with the, at the time, Washington Redskins, made like $2.5 million over 4 years. And like, he has made in his total to this point through this season, $294 million in career earnings. $294 million. And that's not counting what he could make next year at 27.5. In 2026, he's due to make 45. And in 2027, he's due to make 45. Now, will he reach the final 2 years of that deal? No, at least not in Atlanta. He could, if this all came to fruition somehow, and he's going to get paid the 27.5 this upcoming season, and then the $45 million he's due in 26 and in 27, he would have career earnings in upwards of $411 million.
And he has one playoff win.
Uno.
And look, and if this is because he played for Washington, got franchise tag twice. We know the franchise tag is fully guaranteed. When he went to Minnesota in free agency, he had a fully guaranteed deal with the Vikings. And a lot of, you know, there was a big deal at the time. Then I believe he got an extension. He got a couple years added on to that. Then we know that, I guess 2 years ago now, that offseason, the Vikings were like, hey, we're just going to let this bad boy play out. We're not doing anything. We're not giving you a new deal. We're not giving you an extension, anything like that. Then he hit free agency again. He has played the NFL financially better than any player. And I can say that he kind of quote unquote lucked out, because when he was under the franchise tag, he didn't get hurt, which is always that deal that you're playing. But even when he was there, even when he was in Washington back in the day, the quarterback was still a relatively protected position. So he was able to play that role as I'm gonna get my money. You guys can handle the rest of it, and that's what he's done, and he's played it better than anybody.
So just for comparison, right? Just for the sake of poking fun, Kirk Cousins in his career, now he's played extensively longer than Patrick Mahomes has to this point. But from 2012, when Kirk Cousins was drafted, to this past season, he's made somewhere in the vein of $294 million. Mahomes, to this point in his career, which is, again, much shorter, 8 seasons since 2017 when he was drafted, he's made $182 million. He's won 17 playoff games. Kirk Cousins has won one. So Kirk Cousins has made $294 million per playoff win in his career. And Patrick Mahomes is making somewhere like $10.5 or $10.3 million per playoff win in his career. The ROI on that Patrick Mahomes deal is looking absolutely spectacular right now if you're the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right, let's break this out a little bit further. How many years has Kirk Cousins been in the NFL?
So since 2012, so 13 seasons, okay, roughly?
Tom Brady played for 23 years, and his career NFL earnings is 333.
Oh, my goodness.
So you're talking. So he played a decade longer, and Kirk Cousins is going to be nipping at the heels here pretty soon.
Kirk Cousins may pass him this year in career earnings. The GOAT.
Because if he...
In terms of... In many people's eyes.
Because if Kirk Cousins get cut, the Falcons will have to pay him. And if he gets... Somebody's going to sign Kirk Cousins. Somebody is going to sign a pay. Whether it's the Colts like we were just talking about. Somebody's going to sign him to some sort of deal.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he's going to be nipping at the heel of Tom Brady's career earnings and playing, what, a decade less.
That's unbelievable.
Just to put it in perspective about what Kirk Cousins has been able to do. I know people in Minnesota love him, hate him. The guy has been great at what his goal was in the NFL, and his goal was to make some paper. And we saw on that Netflix documentary, Quarterback, that he was able to build himself a fancy house for one playoff win.
That man has created generational wealth for him and his family. No question about it. 913-586-7965 is our number. One person in the text line in 913 said, if Burrow is this generation's Dan Marino, who is Josh Allen? That's an interesting one, because you had made the comparison to Joe Burrow. He could be at risk of becoming this generation's Dan Marino if they don't get the defense figured out on this foot on for that Bengals football team. So if that does come to fruition, let's say, and Burrow finishes up his career and he's got all these accolades and all these numbers and all these stats and he never wins the big one, and he becomes the Dan Marino of this situation, who does Josh Allen become?
You'd have to pick a quarterback that was an elite athlete or a top-tier athlete and was constantly considered one of the best of his era, but was stuck behind a quarterback that was just a little bit better than him. So that sort of narrows your list. I don't want to say Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning wasn't the athlete that, you know, he was never a superstar athlete. He was always gifted with his brain. You know, that's why that he had to keep going up helmet sizes as his career progressed.
Is he more closely?
What about John Elway?
Could be. Elway's not a bad one. I was thinking somewhere along the lines of, like, if we're talking about that generation of players, then this doesn't necessarily apply, but does an Aaron Rodgers like comparison factor in?
That's a good one. Big arm, athletic.
I know that Mahomes plays a style that is very closely resembling Aaron Rodgers, but in terms of their overall personal as well as team success, Mahomes has far and away surpassed him in that standpoint.
Yeah.
In terms of team success. Somebody just mentioned this in the text line, and this was the first name that came to my mind, although it did feel a little bit too on the nose, right? Because they both played quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. Jim Kelly. Great, you know, a good amount of team success, great personal accolades, great numbers that he put up, but he just always seemed to fall a little bit short. So far in his career, Josh Allen has felt a lot like Jim Kelly in that respect. I agree with this listener wholeheartedly, and I'll give you the credit because you put it in the text line before I could say it, but that was the first name I thought of was Jim Kelly. And yeah. maybe that's unfair.
Maybe. You don't want to, when I try to make comparisons, I try and divide it up a little bit, but sometimes you did hit it just right on the nose.
I mean, Jim Kelly, he went to 5 Pro Bowls. He was a one-time All-Pro, right? Went to 4 Super Bowls, obviously. Didn't win any. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Josh has won an MVP at this point in his career. Still has a long way to go. Someone said Josh Allen is Drew Bledsoe. Well, who's Tom Brady then? If he's Drew Bledsoe, who's the Tom Brady that's about to come replace him? That's my question. Another person said Allen becomes Elway. And he might.
I mean, let's look. Josh Allen at some point is winning a Super Bowl. I do believe that. I think their organization is set up better. The reason why I gave the Dan Marino comparison to Joe Burrow is because I don't trust the front office of Cincinnati, like, at all. I think that they're going to continue to make mistakes, and they're not going to be able to build a team around him because look at what they've done. And this offseason is a big offseason for them. Joe Burrow's contract starts to hit in. They got to pay Ja'Marr Chase. Are they going to franchise T. Higgins? What are they going to do about that? Like, there's a lot of questions for them. And if they mess it up now, then you're going to hinder that franchise for years to come. Where Buffalo, like, Buffalo's just ran into the Chiefs multiple times. What is it? 4 of their 5 losses have come to Kansas City in the playoffs. So it's an alarm. So 4 of their 5 losses have come to Kansas City. Like, they're just running into the team that went to 3 consecutive Super Bowls. So this is a team that has made the correct decisions. Like, I don't fault Buffalo for what they've been doing. I think that their franchise is well built for the future.
So my thing is, and like, part of why I have trouble with Elway to Josh Allen is because I feel like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson can kind of both be put into that sort of John Elway-like peg in some respect of, like, these outstanding, incredibly athletic quarterbacks for their era who had a great deal of regular season success and had a ton of personal accolades, and their teams had great regular seasons, but during the beginning and middle portions of their careers did not enjoy the level of team success, at least on the national stage, right? With AFC championships and Super Bowls and things like that. That's very similar to Elway in that respect. So to throw Josh Allen in as an Elway type, I think Lamar Jackson kind of fits into that as well. So I'm kind of like almost trying to avoid the John Elway comparison entirely, because if Josh Allen is John Elway, then where does Lamar Jackson go? Like, who is his comparison? Is there even a comparison for a player like Lamar Jackson?
I mean, I think the play style is easy to say, like Michael Vick. I also think, like, what about Warren Moon? You could throw him in that sort of. The thing is that it's not like the Baltimore Ravens have some crazy new style of offense that they're portraying, so it's hard to make that. But I also think that the Michael Vick comparison, Atlanta Falcons Michael Vick, which, what, was like the early 2000s? What was peak Michael Vick, like 2008?
Peak Michael Vick was probably early to mid-2000s. Like, maybe you were too young to experience Madden NFL 2004.
That's what I was trying to think. Madden was he on the cover of?
Specifically,
I want to say it was like 2007, 2008.
It was Madden 04.
04?
Or 05.
Now you got to look it
up. No, it was Madden. It was Madden 2004 because 05 was Ray Lewis. Okay. It was Madden 04. I have vivid memories of playing it on the GameCube at my grandmother's house growing up. Absolute top tier game. And Michael Vick was unstoppable. Absolutely unstoppable on that game. Like, there's only a few athletes that you can point to, like, in the history of game, video games, sports video games, that are like, that dude, you couldn't stop him. Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl, which is obviously a little bit before my time. Michael Vick in Madden NFL 04. Eric Dickerson on, like, Madden Ultimate Team from, like, Madden 17 through 21. For some reason, his card on Madden was unbelievable. And then, how about this one? Backyard Baseball, Pablo Sanchez.
Oh, my God. I love Backyard Baseball.
Backyard Baseball, Pablo Sanchez. No doubt. 913-586-7965. Someone said that Allen will get one on the back half of his career. Somebody had mentioned Dante Culpepper as a name that sprung to mind for a Lamar Jackson comparison. Steve McNair, possibly.
That's a good one.
I think McNair, you know, unfortunately for his career, you know, it got cut short tragically with his murder, but he could have potentially gotten one throughout the course of his career. Could Allen be McNabb? Superior athlete. Team was always relevant, but they never got the big win. I don't think Donovan McNabb is a poor comparison, at least at this point in their careers. But again, I don't think that the careers of Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, or Joe Burrow for that matter, are anywhere near over. And things can dramatically change for an organization with a coaching change, or you hit on a couple of guys in the draft and it can flip everything on its head fairly quickly.
That's why, like, if you had to pick one of those three, right, between Burrow, Allen, and Lamar, I'm choosing Allen to win a Super Bowl before the other two, because I trust their organization. Like, I think I have problems with their head coach, defensive head coach. I prefer an offensive guy, but I just think that in the moment, right, I need one guy to go and make the drive in the playoffs. You know, some people would probably go Burrow, but you have to make the playoffs first too.
Yeah.
And the Bengals haven't been able to do that. If you put Burrow on another team, maybe I am picking the Bengals. And if Drew is listening to this show right now, you know, I'm surprised he hasn't texted in, because I just don't trust what the Bengals have done up to this point. They picked a quarterback 1-1 overall, which at that point it was like, that's the guy that you have to go with. And then instead of choosing a left tackle in the draft, they chose his wide receiver buddy back at LSU. Like, those are the two big moves that they've made. Past that, it's like, what have they done?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on team success, but if I'm looking at it from just the standpoint of quarterbacks, if I'm looking at it from that narrow-minded perspective of Lamar, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, I'm just looking at those three, I would go with Joe Burrow. Just because he's done it. He's beaten 15 in a playoff game that mattered and got to a Super Bowl. Did they win that Super Bowl? No, they didn't, but they got there, which is something that Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson have not done. And I think that Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen have both had more talented teams than that Bengals team did in 2020, 2021, whenever it was, when they beat the Chiefs. It was a 21, I think, when they beat the Chiefs and got to that Super Bowl. That the Bills, the Ravens team this year was more talented. The Bills team last year was more talented, and they still couldn't beat 15. So from that standpoint, I look at, if one game, all you got to do is win one game to get to a Super Bowl and or win a Super Bowl, I think Joe Burrow would be the guy I would lean towards, at least over those two the moment.
Let me ask you this then. How do you view quarterback wins as a stat?
They don't exist.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm going, right? If you look at the teams, I don't disagree with you with Josh Allen. You look at the organization, the Bengals are notoriously very, very conservative in terms of their spending as a team. So from that standpoint, yes. But if we're just trying to look at it from the standpoint, you know, to try to get into the weeds of this and just look at these three quarterbacks, I lean towards Joe Burrow because he's the only guy right now that is proven capable of it, right? Josh Allen, as good as he can be at times, he's faltered in a lot of those matchups against Mahomes in the playoffs. He's faltered in playoff matchups against Joe Burrow. Lamar Jackson has faltered against all three of those guys in the postseason. Joe Burrow seems to be the only guy that can consistently rise to the occasion in those big time moments more often than not compared to the other two.
Except when he doesn't make the playoffs.
Except when he doesn't make the playoffs, or he's injured, which is also a concern.
That's right? Also, yeah, the guy's knee has fallen apart.
Yeah, his
wrist and his calf.
It's just two bones. That knee is just two bones scraping together right now.
Because what was it? Was it last year he had the like wrist thing, and
yeah,
then it came up in the off season that it was like an injury most related to pitchers. Because I remember when he came to, it was like a Thursday night football game against the Steelers, maybe. He walked into the stadium wearing like a brace.
Yeah.
And then the Bengals tried to play it off as it was just like some sort of brace so that when you're writing on a tablet, you know, you can, it doesn't like, mess with the touchscreen. Like, they had some really bad lie about it. And we're like, okay, like, come on. Like, we've all seen the video. We're not stupid.
So the Burrow injury was the wrist one. Yeah. The baseball or pitcher injury, I think that was Josh Allen, who was dealing with some kind of like elbow thing. And they said it was like closely resembled. That might've been this season at some point. They were saying it like most closely resembled that of like a pitching injury, which immediately everybody's like, oh, is it a UCL tear? Like, is he about to have Tommy John or something? Of course, that didn't end up happening. 913-586-7965. We're going to take a long break here and get you guys geared up for hour number three here of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. We're going to kick things off with an interview from Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. That is coming up next. Logan Weber alongside Quentin Morris. This is 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.